go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Boland.
Ben, we've got another listener suggestion today that it's going to blow your mind, Ben.
Okay, I'm ready.
This is from the same listener as we had last time, Fast Sandy.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know, two in a row for Sandy. Because
turn.
Remember I mentioned in that email that I read, you know, in the last episode with Donald Campbell.
Five good suggestions.
Five good suggestions. Two of them made the cut. How about that?
Nice.
So Sandy, this is another one for you here. This one is about she suggested that we talk about the Isle of Man TT. Mm. And I know that we've talked about this in a kind of an offhand way a long, long time ago.
We've touched on it in one of our earlier episodes on – it's come up before a couple times, but we most directly touch on it when we were talking about some non-car races, I believe.
Yeah, because they're well known for this Tourist Trophy race.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what
the
TT stands for, everybody, Isle of Man Tourist Trophy.
Exactly. And there's a lot going on around this whole event that happens there. It's not just like one race or anything like that.
Right.
This is a big-time event, really big. And it's actually got a long, long history, isn't that right?
Yeah, no kidding. The first time we see this racing at the Isle of Man is in 1904.
Yeah, incredible, isn't it? Now, I think...
Now, those were cars,
that's
though.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Those were cars. That's just racing.
But that's... Okay. I guess I can just say this early on here, because we're talking about car racing in 1904. Those roads don't look like they're made for more than one car to be on that lane. They're narrow, narrow roads.
Public roads.
Yeah, very public roads. So let's just say this early on is that I cannot believe that even at any point they raced cars on these roads. It just seems too narrow.
Well,
but, again, 1904 was the first car race on the Isle of Man. And at that time, it was like a 52-mile track. They raced on what they call the Highland Course. There's actually four courses that we'll talk about.
Right.
They did five laps, so it was like 250 miles, something like that, 255. It took them 7.5 hours, Ben.
Yeah.
7.5 hours. And, I mean, this is a twisting, winding road course. The average speed was somewhere around 30 miles per hour for that initial car race.
Yeah, hold on to your petticoats.
30 miles an hour. Now, again, 1904, monocles. Come on. I mean,
yeah,
that's pretty good, right?
That is really good. I mean, I'm being a jerk about it.
No,
that is
right.
Really good for the time.
And then, honestly, they jumped up the next year to motorcycle racing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they had the International Motorcycle Cup race in 1905.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the speeds were much faster than what the cars were, really.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of strange. And then it was 1907 before they got to the first actual what they call the TT, the Tourist Trophy race.
Yes.
So this race, this race that we're going to talk about here today, dates all the way back to 1907, which is an incredibly long history for a race. I mean, they've held, you know, counting for World War I,
right?
World War II,
also,
and you know any other mishaps that you know have led to not holding this race. They've had 93 races. They've held 93 races as of last year,
which is astonishing.
It's amazing. That's an awful long run. So I think we also touched on this this topic when we talked about sidecar racing.
Yes, we did, didn't we?
I really think we had to have mentioned it because that is it's a dramatic event to watch. I'll tell you that.
And for many, many, many years, the Isle of Man TT is regarded as the premier motorcycle racing event in the world.
Sure.
And it's strange that now, when you've checked out the official website, didn't you think it was strange that they used that line a couple times? For many years, it was considered the most prestigious motorcycle race in the world. I think it might still be.
I don't know. I mean, I don't keep up with the motorcycle racing. You and I are not riders. We should just get that out.
Right. We're not bikers.
We're not bikers. So, you know, a lot of this is just, you know, our kind of fanboy appreciation of what's going on here because it's really cool to watch.
Well, I talked to some of my friends who are British bike fans.
Yeah.
And they were telling me some cool stuff.
All right. So, you know what? I'd say it might be the most widely known.
maybe.
I don't know if it's like the biggest event that's held anymore, but it's got to be close. I mean, okay, let's get this this location out of the way, because Isle of Man, it's not an easy place to get to, really.
Yes. UK listeners, please do bear with us. So where is the Isle of Man, Scott?
It is in the middle of the Irish Sea. Mm-hmm. It's right between Ireland and the United Kingdom. And it's not a huge island. It's about 220 square miles. It's only got like a population of, I think, about 85,000 people. But then again, for this race event that happens,
when the race happens,
tens of thousands of people just swarm this island with all kinds of, you know, tourism dollars ready to spend. Mm-hmm. And, the motorcycle racing is really, really intense.
And this is not a one-day event. This is a multi-race event, multiple classes, multiple records. And just to be clear, we're not going to delve into those too deeply in this episode.
No.
We are going to just sort of set the stage for this in case you would like to go. And we'll tell you how to go if you still can.
I gotta say this, Ben.
What's that?
I think that this may be more than anything we've covered in the recent past.
Yeah.
This is something someone just has to see to even believe.
Yeah, we're going to be talking a lot about some stuff that you should really check out.
The sights and sounds and just the feeling of the air around that place when this is happening is amazing. And it's not, like you said, it's a lot of classes. It's not just one race.
Right.
This thing actually, it's now become a festival.
Nine days.
That's right. And actually, I think that this year's event is even longer than that. I think it's something like 13 days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyways, okay. So we mentioned the location. It's actually, the race is held on public roads. It's a road course.
Yes.
And it's just known on this island since 1907 that, you know, during that week or 2 weeks, this is what life is going to be all about, is motorcycle racing.
And this is a cool little historical twist here, because the way the story goes in the turn of the 20th century, the English government, I'll be on the mainland there, mm-hmm. Would not allow public roads to be closed for motor racing.
Fair enough.
So the Isle of Man government, which is a bit different there, changed the laws a little bit so that you could close public roads for motor racing.
I would assume that was good for tourism.
It still is. That's a great idea.
That was like a 105-year-old great idea, you know, that has just carried on since then, really.
Well, great ideas age like wine.
That's right. So this road course it's fantastically unique is probably the best way to say it.
I like that.
It's amazing. It was once part of a different series. It was once part of the Motorcycle Grand Prix World Championships that were run until about the late 70s. I think it was from like 1949 until late 70s, 76.
Uh-huh.
But then there were safety concerns with that race, and then we'll talk about that for sure.
Okay.
Then it was part of the TT Formula One Championship, the motorcycle series, which was run from the following year, 1977, until about 1990.
Mm-hmm.
But since, this is the overlap here, which is kind of weird, since about 1989, the Isle of Man Department of Tourism has run this race as a festival. And that's why we get this, so it's not just, you know, a weekend event. It's not just, you know, maybe a set of races that happen on a particular Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a 2 week grand happening on the island. I mean, it brings in people from all over the world. It brings in race teams that are world renowned.
Mm-hmm.
The best drivers, riders. I guess you call them riders.
Yeah.
Just the most amazing machines that you've ever seen. I mean, it's really, really incredible to watch. And the variety of series that they run is pretty cool too. Because we mentioned Sidecar.
Yeah,
that had to be one of the coolest things to watch.
So people who listen to our Sidecar episode may recognize Dave Molyneux and Pete Hill. They were the first Sidecar crew to lap at over 110 miles per hour. And
gosh, that's an average speed of 110.
Yeah.
So and this course is what? It's like 37.5 miles, 38 miles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's an incredible speed.
So their lap time was 20 minutes, 23.4 seconds.
Whoa.
That's pretty hot.
That's ridiculously fast. And I do want to say something about that when we get to Let's just get to it. Let's get to the race itself.
We're there
because I was trying again. You know, I mentioned in the last one. I was on my way to work, and again, I'm thinking about the same thing. I'm thinking like, what makes this so unique?
Yeah.
You know, I always think about this. I think about today's podcast on my way into work. Like, what else can I add to this to make it more interesting, or what sparked my interest in the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking like, what makes this so different from other motorcycle races? Why is it so,
unique?
I guess so. Unique. What makes it
fantastically unique?
What makes it stand out, really?
Yeah.
There are three things. First, it has long history. We mentioned, you know, from 1907 until today. That's amazing. The setting is probably the biggest factor here, the key factor in this whole thing. It's, if you haven't seen the Isle of Man course, and I've hinted at it just when you're talking about cars, it is an extremely narrow street. The roads that these things held on. Remember, public roads.
Very much so.
Very twisting roads. And it's lined with things like stone walls. It's got buildings, you know, the type of town where the buildings go right up to the edge of the street.
Yep.
And there's no curb.
There's not like an extra lane for parking.
There's no sidewalk or anything like that in some areas. So there are buildings there. There are trees. There are mailboxes. Mm-hmm. The course is lined with people.
Yeah. A lot of people, actually.
When you get out into the countryside parts of this course, there are cliffs. Mm-hmm. That have, you know, just rocky cliffs that are, I mean, on the outside edge of turns, which is the worst place. I mean, obviously the worst place for these cyclists to go off, and they do. And I guess the third thing here would be the danger aspect, which really plays into the setting.
Yeah.
This is an extremely, extremely dangerous course to race on, and you'll see that in the video. You know, with the speeds that they're reaching.
Yep.
I mean, we're talking. Well, go ahead and tell us about the speeds, Ben, because they're incredibly fast.
All right. So one of the best average speeds, rider Joseph McGinnis in a Honda CBR hit 131.578 miles per hour average speed in 2009. So we're talking 130 there. There have been, as we said, there are a lot of categories here, right? So there's also, you know, the TT Superbike, the Junior TT, or the Super Sport. These
categories,
different classes, yeah, and categories all have, let's just go ahead and say it, they all have speeds in excess or skirting toward 100 plus.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you want to hear something kind of crazy?
Yeah.
My youngest brother. This is the type of bike he rides on the street. He rides a CBR 1000 RR.
Oh yeah,
or he did. I don't know if he.
That's the exact bike,
which is incredible. I mean, now this one's race tuned and everything, and my brother's bike's really fast. But oh boy, that's a bad idea.
So that's a lap time for John McGinnis. That's
yeah,
a lap
exactly.
time of
and
17 minutes.
That is so fast. That is incredibly fast. I mean, to average 131 and a half miles an hour on this course. When you see the course, you'll understand what I mean. And We've got maps,
but maybe our listeners should check them out too.
Man, it's so amazing when you see the rises and the falls in this course.
Yeah.
They spend half of the race, it seems, with the front wheel in the air. Not that they're showing off, but that they've just gone over a hill. I mean, that you're not supposed to be going over this hill at 170. You know, cause we're talking, I mean, I know you said the average speed is 131 or something like 130.
Right. But there are, of course, parts that they'll take slower and take faster.
Yeah, and by slower you mean like 130.
Yeah.
I mean the fastest will be, I mean, like in the 120 range rather.
Yeah.
The fastest are going to be somewhere around the 200 mile an hour range, Ben.
Yep.
And I'm not I'm not making this up. They're right in the ballpark of 200 miles an hour, if not exceeding it at this point.
On a motorcycle.
On a road that was not meant to have motorcycles going 200 miles an hour. And this road, this course that's been around since 1907, as mm-hmm. the speeds have increased, the danger has just grown exponentially every year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the obstructions that I mentioned before. I mean,
sure.
The people, the mailboxes, the trees, all that stuff, parked cars. It's very unforgiving if you slide the bike. You know, you're going to hit something. It may be a curb, it may be a mailbox, it may be
maybe a cliff,
maybe a tree, a cliff, whatever it happens to be. Did you know, Ben, that this has been called, and I'm not, this has been called the world's deadliest race?
Yes, yes.
Now, this is an unfortunate part of this this event is that since the beginning, since 1907, there have been something like 135 deaths in competition. Now, that's not, you know,
so that's not counting the off season where there's just somebody on a motorcycle.
And it's not counting this other series that runs there. There's an amateur series. It's an amateur Grand Prix series called the, is it Manx?
Manx.
Manx. But if you count that series, 237 deaths since 1907, rather. And that's averaging like two people a year that are killed on this course. Mm-hmm. So it's just part of what happens there. And again, this race has been kind of grandfathered in since 1907.
Right.
The speeds have increased. The course hasn't changed a whole lot. I mean, they've changed some corners here and there. They've softened some things.
Sure.
But, for the most part, it's the same course that was run in 1907. We've watched videos of some of these horrific accidents that have happened. I mean, because there's a lot of racing videos, a lot of crash videos. There's some that combine both, obviously.
Yeah.
And some of these riders, I mean, they're driving through the countryside and they slide the bike. The bike goes off one direction, tumbling. They go off another direction. They tumble. They fly through the air. It's like a rag doll.
Yeah.
And they tumble over a brick wall that's out in the middle of this field, and the bike lands literally in the middle of a flock of sheep. And the sheep scatter, and this is all taken from a helicopter that has no way of keeping up. The helicopter is falling far behind these guys in the countryside. They outrun the helicopter, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's monitoring these or taping these for television. But it's a very, very exciting race to watch. I mean, the videos that we watch, they're just adrenaline filled, right?
And there are quite a few. Yeah, you can watch some excellent footage of this, and in a while we're going to tell you some stuff about watching it in person if you'd like to do that. But first, one thing we do want to say, because we'd be remiss if we didn't, Scott, we're not saying, when we say that the track itself or the courses haven't changed as much as you would expect, well, we're not saying that they're stuck in 1904. The route may be the same, but there have been, improvements like paving areas and stuff. Because during, the infancy, like around the pre-20s era or so, the road on the mountain was a cart track, and there were gates.
You're talking about like
I would be on the road,
like a horse cart.
Yeah. Yeah,
or a horse cart, an oxen cart, or something like that. That's incredible that they would even attempt to run a race in an environment like that.
And they were. And as there was more work on the roads, like say, hey, let's unlock the gates. No, I'm kidding. I'm being facetious. But as there was more work, of course, lap speeds are improving, and this is this curtailed a little bit by the outbreak of World War II. But our point is that there is continual infrastructure improvement, but is that enough to mitigate just the tremendous difference in speed now?
No. And you know what? I'm shaking my head the whole time now. It's the course has done really well. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
It's really a beautiful scenery, a setting. Now, we mentioned how deadly the race is and how dangerous it is. It's dangerous for spectators as well.
Right.
Because they do line this track, just about everywhere. Through the towns. There's the countrysides that we talked about, and I know that there are people out there somewhere, but they're, few and far between at that point. But this is something that I think is maybe why it seems so fast. The speeds are incredible.
Right.
And we talk about it being so ridiculous, that how fast they're going. They're going this fast on like the MotoGP courses too.
Yeah.
The thing is, they're out on a track that has, soft barriers that are a long distance away from the track, and it's a nice wide track with a very carefully prepared surface.
I see what you're saying.
And, it's designed for high speed turns. It's not designed, for someone to head down to the butcher shop, and pick up their groceries or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what the Isle of Man roads are designed for.
for the, walk to the fishmongers.
There's incredible sensation of speed on this track because of the surrounding environment. I mean, if you're driving through, if you're going down a lane of road that has trees overhanging it and everything all around you, you're going to get a greater sensation of speed if you're traveling at 50 miles an hour than you are if you're traveling 50 miles an hour in an empty parking lot.
Absolutely.
And this track, this course, the circuit has so many things like that all around it at all times. I just don't even know how the writers keep it straight in their brain. I mean, it seems like it would be on like sensation overload.
Yeah, which is why there are practice runs.
Or sensory overload.
Yeah, sensory overload. Yeah. It's close. And of course, we should mention there's more than one course. There's more than one race course.
Yeah.
One of the first, like the first TT races, were on the triangular course with a start at St. John's. And St. John's course is, you've got a map here, Scott.
Yeah, there's actually four, right?
Yeah, there are four courses.
Okay. So St. John's is the first one.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's also the mountain course the mountain circuit.
Yeah, and that's changed twice.
Yeah, that's changed because this was one of the oldest. I think it's 1911. Is that correct?
1911, yeah. And that only hung around. This iteration of it only lasted for just 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's short-lived.
Very short-lived. So by like 1914, pre-World War I,
right.
This was gone.
Yeah, and then that's the...
Not totally gone, it's just they changed it.
They changed it to a different one.
Yeah. And there's one other one here that's a different one. It's called the Clips, is that right?
Yeah, Clips? Yeah, the Clips course.
The Clips course, all right. And that's... they run like the lightweight races or the ultra-lightweight races on this course. And that was from... That was in the 50s, I think, is when that one first originated. So
yeah.
There's four courses on the island, or at least there were, in one form or another. And they've changed throughout the years. But now they're racing on a race that they call the Mountain Course.
The Mountain Circuit.
Yeah, it's the Mountain Circuit. And it's, what, is it a 37.5 or 38-mile course, something like that?
Yes. And it's also... it's according to, of course, the TT website and some reviews, this is one of the most challenging, courses any cyclist can take on.
I would totally believe that.
Now, I would believe that it's one of the most challenging. I don't know if I'm comfortable saying it's the most challenging.
Okay.
Because I'm not a racing motorcyclist. But, so. These riders, 500 plus each year. So that's the TT races in June or the,
500 plus riders.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
They arrive on Mona's Isle, to tackle the mountain circuit. And of course, this also counts the people arriving for the Grand Prix in August and September.
And the racers we mentioned, I think that they do about six laps or something like that in the top end. Some of them, I think there may just be some that are just a one lap, like a time trial, you know, that they go for what?
Yeah, let's be clear. This is time trial racing. I'm glad you mentioned that because we didn't say that before.
I think that's important to note is that, you know, they don't all start at once. You know, it's not like there's someone waving a green flag at the beginning.
They're not trying to edge each other out or bump or anything.
No, although, they do somehow bunch up, you know, once they get out into the countryside, you know, the faster riders will overtake the slower riders.
Right.
If you can imagine, you know, someone being slow at 170 out in the countryside, that's slow to these guys. You know, the driver or the rider racing at 190 is going to overtake him, you know, in a matter of miles. So, there is some passing that happens.
Yes.
It's very, very dangerous when it does happen. When they get together, I mean, the footage is incredible.
You can see it.
It's also terrifying.
Yeah. And let's also point out that when you look at the way this course is set up, the routes that are taken, and the risk that are taken safety-wise, one of the questions is, and I'm not in any way trying to lessen the impact of the deaths that have occurred in these races, but one of the big questions here is, why aren't there more deaths? And that's the reason there are few in comparison to the difficulty of this course is that the people who are riding this are experts.
Yeah. The world's best.
Yeah. Like, Joey Dunlop, won six consecutive Formula One TTs.
Yeah.
He
has won there 26 times, total.
Yeah.
I mean, in all, you know, he died in 2000.
Yes. He passed
away. So, yeah, I mean, he died in a crash, in a race in, where was that? Estonia, I think is where it was.
I believe so.
But for him to win this race, win this thing outright 26 times, that's amazing. And he's definitely way on the top in the race records as far as like the number of wins. I think the only one behind him is the guy that set the fastest lap.
Is that John McGinnis?
John McGinnis, yeah, and he's up there with something like 19 or 20 wins at this point.
Yeah,
so he's moving up.
And there's also other great racers such as Mike Hailwood, Philip McCallan. This really is a place where you can see some living legends race.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are cool with it, I'd like to talk a little bit about how people can see this.
I've got something that maybe I should mention before this.
Yeah, what is it?
How maybe you can ride in it yourself.
Yes. Oh, totally.
I know.
I forgot about that.
One day of this whole festival that's a standout day for the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And it is probably, it's got to be Mad Sunday.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so you read about Mad Sunday, right?
Right.
Okay, so Mad Sunday this is insane.
Let's say you want to race, but you're no Joey Dunlop.
That's right. It's a tradition. I mean, this is a day when the members of the general public can give it a go on the race course.
Yep.
And now I'm a bit confused about this, Ben, because it sounds all crazy. Like you're able to ride on Mad Sunday on this track. I don't understand this, but there are speed limits, I guess, that are enforced during Mad Sunday. Because there's a report of, I was reading this article where I think it was an inspector, an officer said that, these limits are going to be enforced and antisocial riding or driving will not be tolerated, they expect respect for the island and the roads for the island.
Yeah.
And said that they're going to hand out fines of 200 pounds. Your license could be endorsed. I'm not sure exactly what that means. I would guess suspended in some way. And you also face possible prison time if you're caught speeding on Mad Sunday. Now, that didn't make any sense to me because
– it's a race course.
And for it to be called Mad Sunday and it's a race course, maybe they had set some really high limit that, if you exceed that, maybe it's 100 miles an hour. I don't know.
Well, rules like that, and this might be verging on a little bit of life advice too here.
Okay.
Rules like that never really come into place unless something bad has happened that made them necessary.
I see.
So it's probably a little bit of a little bit of CYA cover your assets.
I would have to believe that there have been some Mad Sunday deaths as well.
Absolutely, because again, if it's just a member of the general public, we're not saying anything bad about a member of the general public, but racing is a set of skills, not to quote Taken too hard. Have you ever seen that movie, Scott?
I have not.
Oh, are you kidding?
No.
Liam Neeson, Taken. It's cool.
I'll check it out.
All right. Well, if it's racing is a specific set of skills, and it's much more dangerous to be racing with people who do not have those skills. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't be surprised.
Understood.
Yeah. And
so there's some hero on a Vespa that's trying to cut through traffic and then look what happens, right?
Yes. Check out our Vespa podcast if you guys want to hear more about those.
Gotcha.
So another thing that is really interesting about this is that with the tourism board taking over and creating a full-on festival, there's been expansion in infrastructure, and should you decide to travel to the Isle of Man to witness one of the most prestigious motorcycle races going on the planet, you have a wealth of options. It does help to be wealthy as well, but you'll want to plan in advance. Now, Scott, we've got the dates, right, for the 2013 Isle of Man?
Yes, we do. I think it goes from, May 25th through June 7th
mm-hmm.
of 2013. So it's a long event, actually. I mean, that's what, 13 days?
Yeah. And the tickets are selling like hotcakes. They're selling like gangbusters.
Yeah, get to the site and check it out. They've got an official website for the Isle of Man TT, event, the mm-hmm. Tourist Trophy Race. And I tell you, they've got a countdown clock going. There's forums there. There's a gallery. There's there's all kinds of information, history about the place, just anything and everything you want to know. And, like you mentioned, where you can stay.
Right. And that'll be something you want to plan in advance. There are also viewing platforms and grandstand seating. Mm-hmm. They've expanded the fan zone area, which is where a lot of people will be staying and where they'll be hanging out during this.
Be safe, because that, I swear to you, I'm watching these videos. We've been watching a lot of videos of this race,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I swear, it's some of these people that are taking the camera shots, they're in the worst spot possible. On the outside edge of a corner, you know, right where they would slide in. And I mean, you can hear these things approaching from what seems like miles away.
Uh-huh.
They sound like angry bees coming towards you, hornets coming towards you. And then just as fast as they appear, they're gone. It's that quick. And I mean, I think I keep thinking like, oh, I hope this doesn't end badly. You know, like when the person turns their camera and looks the other way, you know, as to follow a motorcycle past,
right.
I was wishing that somebody was watching behind them, not that that's going to do any good because the speeds are talking.
So it would happen so quickly.
It would happen so fast that there's nothing you could do about it. So just be careful and, you know, choose your vantage point wisely.
So we've got some late breaking news here. This is from a report on the tickets for 2013.
Okay.
I'm going to quote here. If you still fancy getting a piece of the 2013 Isle of Man Tourist Trophy, you better hurry, as the last tickets for the new fan zone will most likely sell like crazy the instant they're available. They were released on February 18th, I believe. So tickets for all four 2013 race days were sold out last year by July. Those for the final practice session on May 31st, have just been sold out too. So they're opening in time for – they're opening this fan zone area, expanding it, an extra 280 seats for the final two practice sessions on May 30th and 31st.
That's not many.
That is not going to suit demand, but you know what? If we're familiar with the law of supply and demand, I think that's going to be an excellent problem for the Isle of Man Tourism Board.
They can only hold so many people, right? It's an island.
It is an island. And – I don't know. That's what I've got. I would love to hear more about, ideally, some people who have actually participated in the Isle of Man Tourist Trophy.
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know if our bosses are listening, but I sure would love to go out there and just film.
that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe we could field a motorcycle sidecar team, a How Stuff Works team.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about this already.
We have.
Yeah.
We have.
Who would be the monkey?
Oh, man, you know what? I can do the monkey.
It's so dangerous.
Or if we want to take it easy, we could go, because again, we're not bikers. We could get one of the pro cyclists to just do like a two sidecar thing.
That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
I think just talking about this makes me want to go watch some sidecar racing from the Isle of Man. It's so just incredible. It blows your mind to see what they do.
Especially the stationary cam views again. They're cool because you really get a sense of the speed.
Oh, yeah. I'm really going to have to go watch some of this.
While you're watching that, I have a something I think you might want to check out, Scott.
What's that?
Well, you know, we are checking out Netflix. We have a bit of a Netflix movie club going on, and I found something that certainly interested me. I lost some time watching it today, as a matter of fact, and that may interest our listeners and you as well. How much do you know about armored cars?
We had a podcast about armored cars.
So we know a little bit.
Fair amount,
we know
a fair
amount,
I would say. Sure.
There is a 2009 documentary called The Science of Armored Cars. Armored cars are tough enough to resist an onslaught of gunfire, fast enough to evade ambush, and strong enough to repel ammunition strike back. But how do you build them? So this documentary talks about how you build these. I didn't know this, but there are less than 20 licensed armored car makers in the United States.
Less than 20?
I think it's less than 20.
I would have guessed 10 times that amount.
Right. No kidding.
I don't know why I thought there would be that many more, but that's interesting. Plus, I mean, this is really cool. What a cool topic.
Yeah, and I was checking this out because we have done some stuff that touches on armoring vehicles. Such we did an armored vehicle episode. We've checked out tanks. We've talked about the president's limousine and all of the deceptively – all of the amazing stuff behind that deceptively simple exterior.
So here's probably the same or similar information, but just with a visual.
And you can get a firsthand look at how these things are built, the types of armor used or the types of strategies used to make these vehicles, whether they're building one out of whole cloth or building additions onto a model of a, you know, a civilian car or something. Yeah. And I think this is fascinating because it reminds me a lot about custom coach building.
Oh, very much. Very much. I mean, this is exactly the same thing, really. I mean, you're just building the exterior shell. Mm-hmm. But this, I think one of the coolest things about this is maybe the history. I hope they go into the history on this, in this film. Because remember we talked about the history of these and some of the images that we looked at during that. Some of them are comical.
Yeah, some of them pretty wild.
But very functional. So I don't know. I hope it goes into that. I'm going to check it out though,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So we hope that you enjoy this. We'd also like to hear what you think about other Netflix movies we have recommended, or especially if you have a recommendation for us. And Scott, did you see one of our listeners wrote to us about world's worst drivers or worst car accidents?
I did, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, and, so it killed the whole afternoon, I think, or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That one, that one's pretty rough to watch.
Yes,
but if you're more into the science end of this sort of stuff, then you will enjoy the science of armored cars. And Scott, that is all I've really got at this point. I'm just so ready to fanboy out on the Isle of Man Tourist Trophy.
Yeah. Thanks, Sandy, for sending that in for a suggestion. And hope we did it justice, at least got some people's interest piqued in the thing. And you know, if you haven't watched any video of it, please do, because it's really – it's amazing. It's you can't tear your eyes away from it. It's incredible. I swear at the end when they're on the, you know, on the podium,
yeah,
I think they're just congratulating the people that they're still alive. That they've made it through that at that type of speed. I'm convinced that's what they're doing. They're just saying, we're glad to see you back again. We didn't think you were going to make it, but we're glad.
Oh, gosh. What a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't think we'd see you again.
Well, we would love to hear from other listeners because it makes our day when we get a good suggestion from a listener and we can read it on air. So if you would like to be the inspiration for an upcoming Car Stuff episode, feel free to drop us a line on Facebook, give us a holler on Twitter, or just send us an email. Our email address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.